WGTD is supported by Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation, designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. More information about undergraduate and adult education opportunities at carthage.edu. Support for the morning show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD-HD. I'm Gregory Berg. And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. The Racine Symphony plays its next concert this Saturday night at the Racine Theater Guild. And we have two interviews on today's morning show that help preview that concert. Coming up a little later in the hour will be a conversation with Alex Chu, the latest winner of the Racine Symphony Young Artist Competition, a very fine violinist. First, though, we're going to hear from Racine Symphony composer-in-residence Jim Stevenson, who has been hard at work on something called the Racine Young Composers Project. And the result of that collaboration is going to be a world premiere this Saturday night of a piece called Opus One, created by a number of talented young musicians from Racine, none of whom have ever been composers before. Ahead of our conversation with Jim Stevenson, here is a sample of his music, his brilliant and wonderful American Fanfare. American Fanfare by composer Jim Stevenson. Jim Stevenson, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thanks for having me, Greg. Really great to be here.
Good to have you here. Good to have you here. Let's sketch out first for you, for our listeners, I should say, sort of your life story. Where do you come from originally? And wherever that was, wherever you grew up, was music sort of the predominant theme right from the start?
Well, I'll try to give you the 30-second rundown there. I grew up in a suburb of Chicago and found a trumpet on my couch that my brother had left sitting there and decided to pick it up and give it a whirl. And before I knew it, trumpet became my life. This is when I was 9 years old. And so I went to school. I went up to Interlochen, the music camp in high school there as a trumpet player. I went to New England Conservatory in Boston as a trumpet player. Immediately upon graduating from college, I got a job in an orchestra in Florida as a trumpet player. Somewhere along the road there, I tried my hand at composing, and for whatever reason, it just seemed to take to me, or I took to it, and people started asking me to write music, and I did that, and then people started hiring me to write music, which was a new concept to me at the time. And over the next 15 years, composing kind of went uphill, and trumpet playing didn't go downhill, but it just took a second chair to composing.
Huh. Can you tell us more? Maybe it's so long ago you only vaguely remember, but what exactly was that first effort you made at composing something? And ahead of that, had you at least sort of played around with some composing on the side, maybe back in your student days, or not really?
Well, I mean, I think as a budding musician, I did what every student does is, you know, you go to a class studying counterpoint or theory, and they ask you to write a chorale or something like that. And I did that as part of my assignment, but I never, ever thought twice about becoming a composer. And as a matter of fact, it was I was 24 years old, I think, a summer class was being held at Northwestern. And the class was called Adventures in Bad Music. There used to be a radio show, maybe you know of it,
right.
Carl Haas, Adventures
sure.
in Good Music. And I tell this story a lot because it's just so crazy the way my career took shape. We talked about bad music and what made music bad. And we would listen to all sorts of music that students would bring in and say that was bad, and we'd have to explain why. It was not a writing course, per se. We didn't study composition. But our final assignment was to compose a bad piece of music. And at that point in my life, I had never written anything other than those chorales I just mentioned. And I decided, well, this should be easy. I'll just go to my room and write a piece, and I'll bring it in, which is what I did. I wrote a trumpet duet. I brought it in with a friend the next day. We played it for the class, and I'll never forget it. One of the participants raised his hand and said, Jim, you failed the assignment. That was actually a good piece of music. So with that little pat on the back, I started writing, and the rest kind of took shape over the next 20 years.
You began your musical life, as you've already told us, as a trumpeter. So did you begin your composing career, your serious composing career beyond that trumpet duet, writing things for this instrument that you knew so well?
I started mainly by writing brass quintets. I was in a performing ensemble back in Florida, and so I wrote a lot of brass quintets. I was actually kind of afraid to write for trumpet because it was my instrument, once I was taking it more seriously, I should say, because I knew my own limitations as a performer, and I had to get beyond those as a composer. And so I kind of shied away from the trumpet until a good friend of mine asked me to write a trumpet sonata, and that was kind of my early career breakthrough moment where I was forced to write a serious piece, if you would, and happy to say it went very well and kind of took hold in the trumpet world, and then that led to other things as these things go. Yeah.
Now, some people, of course, study composition tirelessly, for years on end, and then nothing necessarily really comes of all of those efforts. And it sounds like it's a very different story for you, that in fact you had only studied composition in the most cursory sort of way, the way any serious musician learns certain principles of how music's put together, but you had never made a concerted effort to learn the craft of composition. So what were those first works like? Were you sort of learning on the job, or by and large, did you find yourself just following your own instincts, and was this a fairly painless, effortless experience?
A very good question. You know, all of us composers come at this from different paths. Mine was, I sat in a professional orchestra for almost 20 years, and certainly since a kid at age 10, I started playing in orchestra. So I'd been in symphony orchestras for a long time. And so when I started composing, the pieces I played every week, whether it was Strauss or Mahler or Mozart or Bruckner, Beethoven, you name it, Ravel, these were my teachers, So I was actually sitting in the orchestra actively listening. Let's face it, trumpet players don't play all the time, so we have a lot of time to consider what's going on around us. And so I was really paying attention, and, why does Ravel sound so good? Well, it's his orchestration and color and, just spectacular craft. Same thing with Strauss or, Beethoven with form, or Mozart is just perfection. And so you listen and you say, why is the audience picking up on this. Why is this working? And so these were my teachers. And then so when I went to compose, I think I do it from the player's perspective. I know what kept me interested as a performing musician. So my music kind of, and I've been told this, and I'm grateful when I hear it, you know, my music takes on the shape of being a rewarding experience for the performer. That's very much in my mind when I'm writing.
Wow. And evidently that ends up producing music that is also interesting to the audience, which when it comes right down to it is even a more important consideration, even if that's not what you're primarily thinking about.
Absolutely. Yep. The audience is very, it's a three-party system, I guess. You know, it's performer, it's composer, performer, and audience. And sometimes those take different rankings, but it's definitely always in my mind.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with the Racine Symphony's composer-in-residence, Jim Stevenson. And in a couple of minutes, we're going to be talking about the project which he has been working on with some young musicians in Racine, the Young Composers Project. Jim Stevenson, I looked at the list of works that you've created, and a whole lot of them are concertos for various instruments. And I should think that as someone who feels a special kinship with orchestral musicians, with the performers who play your pieces, it sort of feels like a concerto would be in an especially comfortable genre in which to work. Tell us a little bit about just the wide breadth of concertos which you have composed, and actually what is so challenging about crafting these particular works.
Well, it's been a very, as you mentioned, a very big part of my output. And as I mentioned earlier, coming from being a performer myself, you know, a lot of these people for whom I've written were my colleagues and my friends and sometimes my competition when I was growing up. And so when I started composing and then they returned to me to say, hey, you know, Jim, I heard you're writing. Would you like to collaborate on something? There really isn't, at least for me, any greater, what's the word I'm looking for? It's just a tremendous feeling to be able to write for your friends and your colleagues. And it's also a challenge. You know, it's you don't want to let them down.
Right.
And so one of the first, actually, the very first concerto I wrote was for a very dear friend who I grew up with. He's principal trumpet of the Oregon Symphony now. His name is Jeffrey Work. And he's just one of the best trumpet players you've ever heard. And he came to me and said, Jim, I have an opportunity to do a concerto next season. Would you like to write it? And what I loved best about this project was he said, and Jim, I want to challenge you as a composer. I've heard some of your work. And I love it. That's why I'm asking you. But let's do this. Let's try this with the ending. Or let's, you know, I want you to really know my voice, but also take me a step, and I'm going to take you a step further in your career. And it was that challenge that it just makes us go somewhere we otherwise wouldn't have as an artist or as a composer. And I'm happy to say that was a very rewarding and successful experience. And to this day is one of my most often played concertos. But yes, through my career, I've been able, very fortunate, I've written for principal players of many of the major orchestras, the New York Philharmonic, the Chicago Symphony, and just friends who are, their careers are going breakneck speeds, and I get the opportunity to kind of join in for the ride. You know, it's really fun.
I should think there are a couple of things that can make it tricky. One of them is the idea that typically we think of a concerto not only as one hopes a great piece of music, compelling in its own right, but also a work that is going to be some kind of a showcase for the virtuosity of the musician in question. And so the question then becomes, I mean, to boil it down to simplistic terms, how hard to make this thing?
Yeah.
And is a given wonderful trumpet player, for instance, especially adept at certain technical tricks? Or when you get to that level of the business, are you just, in a sense, good at anything and equal to just about any challenge?
You're talking about Jeff, for who I wrote the
first
trumpet concerto.
Or in general.
Or anybody. Yeah. Well, there's a bit of give and take also. You know, if I send the music to them and they say, look, Jim, this is just too hard. Actually, that did happen with my first trumpet concerto. The first version is much harder than the final version, which is still very difficult. That's a great part of it, too, is the collaborative. You know, we're both still alive. We can collaborate on this and come up with ideas that'll make it give it a better chance to withstand the test of time. But, you know, I also, I'm very aware of history, and that a lot of concertos were, when they were written, were impossible to play. There are many stories out there. You know, the Barber Violin Concerto, the first two movements were too easy, so they asked for a hard movement as the third movement. And when Barber submitted it, the guy said, this is unplayable. And now it's played everywhere, you know. So I trust that if I write something interesting, whether it be difficult, people, young players will hear it performed and they'll rise to the challenge, and then it hopefully takes its part in the repertory.
Hmm. Yeah. What does it feel like to write a concerto for not the trumpet? I mean, not your own instrument. I mean, and what kind of learning curve has been involved in, for instance, knowing what it's like to write a violin concerto, for instance, or some other instrument with which you are not as intimately acquainted?
Sure. On one hand, I think it's almost a benefit because I'm not held back by any restraints that I automatically assume are there. Hmm. I just write music. And again, it's that collaborative process where if I send something to, and this is, I've written two violin concertos, and in each case I send it to the performer. And in each case they said, Jim, it's great, but there are, you know, two or three sections we need to talk about. And I think this happens with all, with most concerti, but, and then you end up with a better product. But I think for me, it's all just about writing music and allowing the possibility that there are going to be edits that come later. I don't ever assume that whatever I write is going to be perfect for the player. I want them to chime in so that they're comfortable on stage. They're the ones who have to do the hard work, really, you know.
How much do you think about the audience liking your piece? I mean, composing something that's going to go over like gangbusters with the audience, or do you not worry very much about that? Is it more important to you that this is a good piece of music in your own estimation, whether or not the audience that hears it ends up getting it or appreciating it?
This is a very difficult question, I have to admit, and I've heard different responses from composers, some who don't regard the audience at all, and others maybe more in my camp where I do think about the audience as part of the process. And I'm not saying that composers who don't consider the audience are doing it incorrectly. I think history would prove that there's been a lot of success there. For me, I sit in a lot of audiences, and because I'm listening to a lot of my premieres or other pieces being played, and I'm sensitive to how they're feeling, you know, if they're shuffling or if they're reading their program or dropping candy or whatever. it means that maybe they're not engaged at that moment. And so I do take it upon myself to try to write music that is thoroughly engaging the entire time while maintaining a sense of form within itself or intellectual, you know, it has an intellectual standard that would bear study. But I do consider my audience, sometimes maybe to a fault, other times maybe not enough, but it's always part of my process. It really is.
I wonder, I mean, as someone who's dabbled a bit in composition myself, I'm not sure I've yet come to the place where my skin is sufficiently thick to not be really bothered when I hand a piece of music to the chamber singers at Carthage or whoever, my church choir, whatever it might be, and I will occasionally get this sense of kind of indifference. I mean, not very often, I don't think ever, have I handed them a piece of music and they just sort of turned up their nose in distaste, but I certainly remember what it felt like to give out a piece of music that didn't strike them as a big deal. It was okay, but nothing special or whatever. And I wonder, for someone who does this for a living, essentially, are you long past the point where that kind of reception bothers you? Maybe you never get that response ever to anything you write.
That's not true. I do get that response. No, it's look, I'm in this for the long haul, and I think my goal is, if I ever get that feeling, is to learn from it, maybe ask some questions. What about this isn't striking? You know, you find the right words to figure out what is not resonating with your performer. But, you know, to put it in other terms, I'm a big baseball fan, and we just had a new star for the Cubs come up last weekend, Chris Bryant, and he struck out his three first first three plate appearances. You know, he's supposed to be the next hero. So you choose whether to judge him by that one time at the plate or one game, or maybe he's going to have a 20-year career where you kind of – everybody's going to have ups and downs within that career. So I sort of take the long view, and if something doesn't go well, I'm like, you know, I think to myself, why didn't that work? And I learn from every experience, which is why I try to go to all of my premieres as well. I had a mentor, a composer, who told me that, said, go to every single premiere. Because you meet people who tell you different things about their music. Sometimes they're rude about it. Sometimes they're great. But you have to just listen and get a sense of what works and what doesn't and learn from it.
One other quick question, and then we need to talk about the Racine Young Composers Project. I often like to ask composers when I have the pleasure of talking to them, are you more of a Mozart or a Beethoven in the sense of do your musical thoughts tend to flow pretty smoothly and without interruption onto the page? Or are you more of a Beethoven in which the process is a more tortured one and your wastebasket tends to really fill with all of the discarded ideas that don't end up working out? Or is it impossible to generalize that when it comes to your own process?
Well, first of all, I would never compare myself to either Mozart or Beethoven. However, as far as the process goes, whether this is a blessing or a curse, I do write pretty quickly. And so I will get to the piano or to the computer where the music writing software is. And it does flow pretty quickly. That being said, I mean, technology these days, let's face it, it allows us to edit pretty quickly. So if I'm writing something and I don't like it, I can just save it as a different file and start something. You know, there's no erasing that goes on. I can hear it played back immediately because I'm not a great piano player. And so I become a listener and I immediately know what needs to be fixed. And it's just, I think it's perhaps a faster process. So my editing happens almost in real time. It's not where I have to burn something or anything like that. But that being said, I am relatively quick for better or for worse. Jury's out on that one. We'll see.
You are at work with the Racine Symphony on this project called the Racine Young Composers Project. And you were telling me just before we went on the air, when I asked if the symphony was playing a piece of yours this weekend, you said, no, not a note of my music, but they're going to play this work that I've been overseeing. So tell us about the Racine Young Composers Project and what the process has been and what kind of an experience it's been for you.
It's been a fascinating experience. I got a call from Maestro Lorino maybe a year and a half ago saying that he wanted to get me involved with some young people up here. And through some discussion, we came up with this idea that I would meet with maybe 12 or 15 high school students. And ours is pretty unique in that, I mean, a lot of orchestras, they do play works by younger composers, which is fantastic. And we're doing the same. However, in our case, none of these kids had ever written a note in their lives. So I basically got them at zero, you know, at point A. And I only met with them five times for 2 hours each time. So that's a total of 10 hours. And from the first day, which I think was back in October, through March, during the course of these five meetings, there were about 12 kids, and I assigned them each to write 20 seconds of music. We wanted about a four-minute piece, and I guessed that would be about 20 seconds each. So they wrote 20 seconds, just a melody, or not orchestrated, nothing like that, just whatever they could come up with. Just write. Don't judge, just write. And then we pieced them over the next sessions, we pieced those melodies together, put them in order, and then we went into orchestrating them. I just said, just do what you can, you know? And they did. They came up with really great ideas, and it works as a piece. We have a four-minute piece composed by, I think, 12 composers, and they'll be on stage or at least in the audience standing up or raising their hand when their 20 seconds comes up. And you know, admittedly, I changed one or two notes that just didn't work within the register of the, you know, a flute can only go so low, or a bass or whatever. They just didn't know that part, and we talked about it, we fixed it, and now we have a piece. We went from zero to piece in, you know, 10 hours, which I think is pretty extraordinary and very unique.
Wow. Yeah. And how often have you done something in this format?
This would be the first time.
This is the first.
With an orchestra, yeah, involved. I did it once before at a festival maybe a decade ago where I met with people who hadn't composed. And I think that's how this idea kind of came to pass. But in that case, it was just writing for whoever was in the class with us, this project 10 years ago. And so I had saxophones and a trumpet and percussion. And it was mainly solo instruments. But in this case, you know, we just went straight to the orchestra so that we'd have all that different color to work with. And very fascinating.
Wonderful. So people will get the opportunity to experience this brand new work, Opus 1, this collaborative brand new composition this weekend with the Racine Symphony. I know that also you have done quite a number of presentations. I mean, as soon as we finish recording this interview, you're on your way to McKinley Middle School in Racine. Tell us what happens at these presentations that you've been doing in the area.
Again, it's just fascinating. I love working with young minds or just talking with them. I mean, the first thing I do when I go to these middle schools is I say, all right, name some famous composers. And they, of course, list the Bachs, the Beethoven, the Mozart. And I say, well, what do they all have in common? And they never get the answer. And then I say, with a chuckle or a twinkle in my eye, they're all dead, right? Mm-hmm. And so then they laugh, and I get to say, I'm a living composer. There are people out there who, I'm not comparing myself, but the Bachs, the Beethovens, the Mozarts, who are walking the streets with you and cooking dinners and taking their kids to baseball games and all the above. You know, we're real people. We just happen to be composers writing music. And so then we just open it up, and I let them hear some of my music, and then we have the best part, which is the question and answer, where they just ask the greatest questions because they've never seen a living composer, and they're fascinated by how we do what we do. And it's just a really great experience. It gives me a lot of energy for the rest of the day to go back and compose more music.
I bet. I also wanted to ask you, we just have a moment, on your website, when I looked through all the different things you've created, I also saw something there called Compose Yourself, which has been, according to your website, performed over 250 times. What is that work?
Compose Yourself is what I call a young audience piece. Every symphony orchestra has to do educational concerts. And for audiences of maybe third to fifth grade students who will be considering picking up an instrument in the next year or so. And when I was in the Naples Philharmonic, which was my performing job as a trumpet player, we had done hundreds of concerts where our brass quintet or a woodwind quintet or a string quartet would go out to the various schools and say, hey, here's the trumpet, this is what it sounds like, or this is the violin, this is what it sounds like. And we had done that for 10 years, and it just got difficult to be fresh and come up with new ideas. And so one of my colleagues, at this point I was a composer, and one of my colleagues said, Jim, why don't you just write us a piece so that we can just do something fun and we can just show up for work and play for these kids and they have a great time. And so I did. I wrote this. It's a Meet the Symphony Orchestra for about the first 30 minutes. You go through each instrument. It's all original music, and it's very interactive. Kids laugh and learn, and they really have a good time. The Compose Yourself title comes from the last 15 or 20 minutes of the show. I call it a show. It's a concert. Where we teach the audience, the kids, how we compose music, what goes into a new piece of music being created. And so we have volunteers come on stage, and we give them three melodies to listen to, and they pick one. And we give them three harmonies to listen to, and then three rhythms, and it's constructed so that no matter what they pick, they all fit together. And then we have a world premiere right there on stage, and the kids join us, and they play some percussion instruments, and it's really fun. And every concert is a world premiere, and it's, the best part is it's just interactive. And for me to see the smiling kids as they learn about classical music, especially classical music by a living composer, that's what's been most gratifying about it.
Jim Stevenson, composer-in-residence for the Racine Symphony, and their next concert, which will include the premiere of Opus 1, is coming up this Saturday evening, 7:30 p.m. at the Racine Theater Guild. And you can go to racinesymphony.org for more information. Jim Stevenson, great to meet you, and very best wishes with all that you compose and do from this point on. And thank you for joining me today on The Morning Show. This was a pleasure.
Thank you, Greg. I had a great time.
Thank you.
I feel badly to pot down such a beautiful, beautiful performance of Pablo de Sarasate's Zigeunerweisen. But it's time for us to begin talking with the remarkable young man who is responsible for that beautiful playing, who also happens to be the most recent winner of the Racine Symphony Orchestra Young Artist Competition. His name is Alex Chu. He is a sophomore at Brookfield Academy in Brookfield, Wisconsin, and he has made the way down to WGTD Studios to speak with me for this portion of the morning show and to talk about his love affair with the violin and his hopes for the future. He will be performing with the Racine Symphony as part of their concert coming up this Saturday evening. Alex Chu, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to make your acquaintance, and congratulations on winning this competition in a field of what I understand was a number of very, very fine young musicians. Let's start at the beginning. When did you first hold a violin in your hands, as far as you know?
Probably at the end of second grade. I switched to violin because my brother, who switched about maybe half a year ago, because at first I started playing the piano at the age of three. And then eventually I switched over, and I've been playing ever since.
Do you remember what prompted you to switch over in second grade? Were you dissatisfied with the piano somehow, or intrigued by the violin, or what?
maybe some dissatisfaction, but also maybe some jealousy of my brother because he was holding a new instrument that I'd never seen before.
Ah, so this is an older brother?
Yes, an older brother.
Okay, so you're seeing him and I presume hearing him play the violin and thought that looked like something you wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
How quickly did you find an affinity with the violin? I mean, from the moment you held it and first played it, did it feel like a good choice for you?
At first, it was not exact. I didn't feel like it was exactly the right instrument, but probably throughout my second year, I felt that I'd grown in love with the violin.
Mm-hmm. Well, clearly, if you played as beautifully as that, that's for certain. Was your brother any kind of a help to you, or are you each pursuing the violin in your sort of own way?
He was kind of a help to me, also kind of a hindrance sometimes. But, yeah, because we used to play in adjoining rooms sometimes.
Ah.
We'd move around, and I would hear him half the time playing some other concerto while I was playing.
How much older is he than you?
He is 3 years older.
Oh, okay. Well, it was probably not the worst thing in the world to have another even more experienced violinist in the house to keep you mindful of the goal always before you. Are your parents musical? Did you inherit your talent from them?
My mom is probably the more musical one. She plays piano, mm-hmm. and sometimes she accompanies me.
Oh, okay. Very good. So tell us then, from the time that you began taking the violin, from the very beginning, were you incredibly serious about it? I mean, was it the most important thing in your life? I mean, the thing you were focusing on more than anything else?
Probably at the time, I felt that it might not have been the most significant thing at the time. But my mom kept on pushing me, along with my brother and his awesomeness. Yeah, and probably by the time I hit middle school, I felt that practicing was more of my thing and that I didn't have to have any motivation by my parents or by my brother.
In other words, you were happy to practice. It was your choice to practice as
yeah.
much as you have. Tell us about your teacher. I know your teacher now is Dr. Sasha Mandel, that I've heard really good things about. Has she been your teacher all along?
I switched to him about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I used to play with the String Academy of Wisconsin down in Milwaukee.
Right.
But then we switched probably, I think, about sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And we switched to Dr. Mandel, and I've been playing with him ever since.
Very good. When you began violin, did you at all dabble in what we know about Suzuki violin, which involves a lot of playing by ear?
Mm-hmm, yep. Yeah, I played through the sixth book.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. So you were very serious in your pursuit. Very good. along the way, have you discarded piano altogether, or did you continue to play the piano as well?
I kind of pushed piano off to one side when I took on violin, but I still play once in a while, just maybe some tunes.
Mm-hmm.
Something I hear on the radio.
Right, right. And as you have studied the violin, what are the things that you have sort of worked on the hardest? I mean, have there been particular technical challenges, certain hurdles that you've really had to focus your energies on to really master? Or by and large, has violin come easily to you, and has it just been a natural and smooth progression to the excellence you have today?
It was relatively smooth, but there were a few bumps along the way. For example, when I started learning spiccato, which is kind of an off the string bow stroke, I couldn't get it for about 2 or 3 months, and Dr. Mandel was kind of annoyed. But yeah, eventually after a while I got that, and probably my up bow staccato, I'm still working on it slightly.
Mm-hmm. So there are the fine tuning matters of a technique, especially when you're tackling pieces as difficult as this, I suppose. Always something to learn, always something to master. Who are your favorite composers, or maybe another way to phrase that is, are there particular composers whose music you especially like to play, or maybe certain periods of music where you feel like that style is one with which you have a special affinity?
I kind of like Kachaturian. Recently, I heard his violin concerto and also his Spartacus, his Adagio.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm, because we've been playing at the Milwaukee Youth Symphony Orchestra. And I felt that I liked that piece a lot, especially when you hear the melody and you feel something grabbing at you when you see that. And also, another composer that I like is Sibelius.
Oh.
I like his violin concerto especially.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. I just like the iciness that comes out of it, but you also feel some warmth.
Mm.
And the contrast is unique.
Right. Yeah, that's an absolutely beautiful masterwork. Now, does your teacher, Dr. Mandel, does he select your music, or is that something you get to do? Or do you choose your repertoire together?
It's kind of mutual. Sometimes he picks pieces for me, and sometimes I pick pieces. But we try to go kind of step by step, so that I try to master each technique from each new piece.
Right. And I suppose once in a while he assigns works to you, not because he expects you to necessarily love that music, but because playing it will be good for you, technically speaking, a good learning experience.
Yeah. Like, for example, he gave me the Mozart Concerto No. 3, and I didn't really like the I feel like it was kind of more of a Baroque kind of style, but I played through it, and I was like, okay, time to move on.
Right. Well, especially when you've sunk your teeth into some of the other works that you've been talking about. That has to be one of the most exciting things, of course, is there's always a new piece to be learning. So you entered the competition with the piece that we heard, the Pablo de Sarasate, Zagornevicen. Tell us a little bit, for our listeners who maybe aren't particularly acquainted with that piece, tell them sort of what it's about and what sort of challenges it poses for you.
Well, Zagornevicen, its subtitle is Gypsy Airs. And it's basically about the gypsies. And I feel that some parts, the slow parts especially, are about the gypsies and their hardships that they faced throughout traveling and trying to find a homeland. And the Allegro part is the faster part. It's more of a dance, kind of like a celebration. That the gypsies, I think they found their home. That's why I think.
So they're rejoicing at that point. Yeah. So, for instance, Zagornevicen, how long ago did you learn? Has that been in your repertoire for quite a long time, or is it a relatively new addition to what you have mastered and polished and perfected?
I picked up the Zagornevicen at the end of August last year, and I've been polishing it ever since.
And what else are you working on right now? I mean, do you typically have several pieces in some process of being perfected, or are you usually working on a single piece at a time?
Usually a single piece at a time with some excess, not really excess, some extra pieces. Like, for example, along with Zagornevicen, I'm working on the Wieniawski Concerto.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm finishing that up.
One or two? Two?
Two.
Okay,
yeah. And also a few of the Bach partitas, some of the movements.
Very good. In addition to, of course, what you work on with Dr. Mandel, I know that you are also a member of the Milwaukee Youth Symphony. Is that the only orchestra you play in right now as a regular member?
As a regular member, yes. Mm-hmm. But last year, in the summer and in October, I played at the Wisconsin State Honors Orchestra in Madison, where I sat as concertmaster.
Oh, exciting. Very good. So tell us what the experience is as a soloist versus being in an orchestra or even sitting as concertmaster. Do you get a different kind of satisfaction from one versus the other?
I feel that with being a soloist, it's more about kind of hitting the notes and feeling the music in more of a personal way. Hmm. You have to feel it yourself. And unlike an orchestra where you're sitting and you're working, it's more of teamwork for an orchestra. You have to work together and balance out all the sounds and the dynamics. And soloist is, I feel like it's more of trying to touch the people out in the audience and showing also at the same time, showing some skill.
Right, absolutely. What about chamber music? Do you get very much opportunity to play chamber music? And if so, what is that experience like for you?
I don't play too much chamber music, but at the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra, we do a little bit once in a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of a whole different experience, isn't it?
When it is,
you don't have a whole body of violinists, but just you and maybe another and a piano or whatever and a different kind of music making. I've sometimes heard it described as, in some ways, the best of both worlds. I mean, when you play a piano trio, you're still very much as the violinist, playing as though you were a soloist, but in this close collaboration with other musicians. So hopefully you will have more of those opportunities. What are your aspirations? Not that you need to be mapping out your whole life as just a sophomore in high school, but do you think very much about pursuing violin professionally? I mean, do you hope that that will be your future as a professional violinist?
Well, I plan to pursue music, especially violin, into college and beyond, possibly a major or a minor. And my goal is to get maybe into a professional orchestra. But I also want to go into the medical field, possibly in like orthopedics or something, because I feel like I want to help other people and help them recover. It gives a gratifying experience, I feel like.
That actually brings up something else that I know you are involved in, that you're all on your school's golf team, right?
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about the challenge of making room for golf when you are also such a serious and accomplished musician. First of all, are you playing golf with Dr. Mandel's blessing? Is that okay with him that you have this other important ingredient in your life?
He's kind of opposed to me playing golf. He feels that it kind of injures the fingers once in a while with hitting the ball. Especially
really?
If you mess up the swing, which is kind of once in a while, but, you know, it often happens, sometimes happens.
Wow. I never even thought about that could be a factor. I was thinking more about how it takes time away that you otherwise would be practicing, and yet there are only so many hours in the day that you probably should be practicing. At some point, you probably start to do harm to yourself if you're really playing too much. So do you do other sports, or is golf it?
Golf is the main thing.
Mm-hmm. Are you good?
I'm okay. I'm on our varsity team.
All right. Well, very good. You must be just fine then. So it's probably a healthy thing that you have both of these things in your life to balance things out. Are there other interests that fill your time besides violin and golf?
I also have a sort of a passion in computers. Just last summer, I built my own computer, and I've been helping others, some of my friends, build their own computers.
Ah. So that could be another avenue for you to pour your energies. Very, very good. Let's get back to Zigeunerweisen. Now, we are recording this interview actually on Friday night, more than a week ahead of the concert. At this point in time, have you yet sat down with the conductor of the Racine Symphony, Maestro Larino, who I presume will be conducting this performance?
Not yet, but probably next Saturday, next Friday, actually. Sorry, we have a rehearsal coming up.
Okay, so you're just going to have the one time then to rehearse with them.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had that experience before of soloing with an unfamiliar orchestra, or will this be kind of a first for you?
This is actually a first for me.
Well, we trust that that's going to go very, very well. What are the next pieces down the horizon that you aspire to play?
I hope to play Sibelius's violin concerto and possibly maybe Brahms or Tchaikovsky's violin concertos. Hmm. Those are also really good ones, I think.
Yeah, well, and that will allow you to pour all of this romantic expressionism into your playing. I suspect you're going to do exciting things with those. And on the horizon, anything that you hope you're going to be able doing in the next couple of years as you finish up at Brookfield Academy? I mean, in terms of musically, do you have other aspirations, or are you just going to try to be a better and better violinist?
I think that my goal is just to try to become the best violinist that I can.
Well, you are off to a wonderful start, and it's so exciting to hear you at such a young age already playing with such passion and with such poise as well. Again, Alex Jew is going to be performing with the Racine Symphony Orchestra for their concert, which is coming up this Saturday night. And you can call the Racine Symphony at 636-9285 if you would like more information about Saturday night's concert. We're going to hear just a couple more moments from Alex's performance of the piece, which earned him the victory in the most recent Racine Symphony Young Artist Competition. Pablo de Sarasate's Zagoyner Vices, The Gypsy Airs. Alex, it was great to meet you, and we wish you only more success and more happiness as you continue to play the violin with such distinction, and we appreciate you joining
us.
Oh, it's good to have you here. Great to have you here on WGTD's Morning Show. Here's again a little more of Alex's performance of Zagoyner Vices.
Register by dialing 262-605-7900.
You're listening to WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, your gateway to public radio. And it's 8:58 here on WGTD. Tomorrow on the morning show, Yuri Maltsev from Carthage College, talking about recent events in Russia, and particularly recent developments with President Vladimir Putin. And on Thursday, we preview Carthage College's production of The Man of La Mancha, which opens this weekend. Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. WGTD is also supported by Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation, designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. More information about undergraduate and adult education opportunities at carthage.edu. Cloudy and windy today with a high of 50 degrees, a very slight chance of afternoon rain showers. Cloudy and windy tonight again, a slight chance of rain, low of 33, tomorrow's high 49. This is WGTD HD.